which does not contribute to a good efficiency. However, in plasma physics, same thing happens at high temperatures. You get particles colliding with each other, giving off photons, and acting sort of like steam particles in a steam engine. And if you could direct those very precisely, you would have the most fantastic machine for generating energy. And Tesla somehow visualized this, although he couldn't quite put it all together. But his mind was very fertile and could see this. And this is why I have great respect for Nikola Tesla. And a lot of people come along and try to steal your ideas. Either they shoot you down and say you're you know, weird or strange or you're not. But, I mean, they're always the first ones to try to steal what you got. Yeah. And that's what they did to poor old Nikola Tesla. And the thing that really bugs me, if you look at the new book on Tesla, Man Out of Time, they had the gall to award him an Edison Medal back in 1917, and they expected him to take this with great humility. I mean,
he had already turned down a Pulitzer or Nobel Prize for physics along right. with Edison mm-hmm. because he was going to have to share it with him.
Well, Edison stole about $50,000 worth of his ideas and promised never paid him. So, I mean, I can see why the Tesla went the way he did and felt remorse against Edison.
You know, when you talk about the ball lightning, Bob, but if you form this with this big coil, this big Tesla
right.
coil, and what does it do? Does it suspend in the air?
It hangs in the air. It sometimes rolls around. I've only done it five times, and I have published one picture on it, which is published in Radio Electronics, February 1981. And that has some pictures of ball lightning in that particular issue. And I have devised a way of doing it with lasers, which is part of the pyrosphere fusion reactor concept. And this device will actually make ball lightning every time. And this is what I've started a foundation called Pyrosphere Fusion Foundation. We have offices now in the World Trade Center in New York City. And we are going to raise $3 million to build this fusion reactor concept, build a device to show that we can get up to these high temperatures. And we only need 2 years to do it in. And we've already got approval from the IRS to raise money and give tax exemptions to large corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we're going to develop this device, because this concept is just too advanced for people in the Department of Energy, and I feel very good about surviving.
It's not a gasoline engine, they don't understand.
Right. If it if it doesn't have a spark plug, then it can't run. And this is
unfortunately, the Department of Energy is being disbanded anyway.
I'm glad that I've outlived the Department of Energy.
Well, I'm trying to visualize in my mind how this works. You've got the coil, you form a piece of ball lightning there, and that will have temperatures at incredible levels.
Well, it's not exactly that. You can, in nature, you only get ball lightning at probably up to 10,000 degrees.
All right.
The way we're going to do it in a precision way, and you have to use lasers, because lightning is a very random process. You can never get lightning to hit exactly the same place time after time. With a laser beam, that beam is there every time as a perfectly straight line. So what we do is, first, we have five lasers. The first laser is a very powerful pulse laser, and what that does is you charge up a capacitor bank and then let that discharge through the laser tube and create a very bright pulse of light. Now, that pulse of light leaves the end of the laser optics and is passed through other optics, which focuses it down to a very sharp point, just like you focus sunlight down to burn a piece of paper with a magnifying glass. Now, that focal point is inside a pressure vessel. In other words, we pulse this laser. We have the light going in through a window in the pressure vessel or high-pressure tank through some optics, which brings it down to a narrow point. Now, if you have a laser that has pulse power of about 2 million or more watts, in other words, we dump that energy in a few millionths of a second, which the laser may only take 40 watts to run, but if you can dump that energy very quickly, you can get tremendous amount of energy like an explosion. If you have a match, which is about approximately 7 watts, and you use all that energy in a millionth of a second, you have 7 million watts of energy very quickly. Now, with a laser light, we can do that. We can actually, like, fill a large water tank and then pull the bottom out and dump all that energy quickly. And that creates a laser spark. Instead of making the spark with lightning, we make it with lasers. And that spark is around for approximately of 100 microseconds, and that spark is in the focal point of four other lasers, which are turned on precisely at the right time, and they stabilize that spark and start dumping energy into it in the form of an infrared laser light heating process. I don't want to get too technical here.
Well, listen, it sounds fascinating, and I want you to continue with it. We don't mind you getting technical, as long as you can say it where I can understand it. And
All right.
You got to understand, I'm a dummy. So we'll be right back with it. I'm speaking to Bob Gocko. We're talking about ball lightning as first envisioned by Nikola Tesla and becoming a reality because of Bob's very extensive work in the field. Be back with you in a moment.
This is E.G. Marshall. If you're facing an operation and want to find out the qualifications of your surgeon, here's how. Ask your family doctor, your local or state medical society, the hospital where the surgeon practices, or the surgical department of the nearest medical school. They can tell you whether the surgeon is board certified or a fellow of the American College of Surgeons. If so, he or she has met rigorous standards of professional competence and ethics. This message is from the American College of Surgeons.
I'm Bill Jenkins, and it's Open Mind on KABC tonight. And with me is Bob Gocko. Bob is well known to a lot of us in our audience. Bob was telling before we got started on the show, I'd had a number of requests to get you on and to tell about the amazing work that you've been doing up in Utah, dealing with and working with the concepts and the ideas of Nikola Tesla. Now, we had lasers involved here, which is something I'm sure Tesla did not envision, or maybe he did. I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
I don't know for sure. He did talk about a death ray, but I think it was mostly in his mind. He never really worked on that.
We had, speaking of that, there's a gentleman here in Orange County that contacted me after we had done another show on it and said that he personally saw, back in New Jersey, Tesla demonstrate his death ray, and in this process, the victim was a dog. And he has it pretty well documented.
Mm-hmm.
He's an elderly gentleman now, of course. Might be interesting for you to talk to him sometime.
Sure.
All right. So you've now got a sustained ball of lightning?
Yes. The fireball created by the laser spark discharge is stabilized by these four other methanol lasers, which puts out millimeter wavelength. I don't want to get into all the technical end, but it has the capability of heating that plasma that's already generated very efficiently because it's working at the right wavelength or frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Wavelength and frequency are related,
right.
And basically we work at 245 gigahertz, which is 1.2 millimeter wavelengths, which is just the right length of energy to excite and heat that fireball. And what we do is just let the fireball sit there for half an hour. This is like an eternity in plasma physics. Everything in plasma physics happens in microseconds and fractions of microseconds. And so we just put this energy in very gradually for a half an hour and increase the pressure as we put the energy into the pressure into the fireball. And the fireball is in a pressure vessel, which we increase up to approximately 340 pounds per square inch. And our calculations show, and they're not just mine, they're Dr. Robert Bassus from Brigham Young University and some other people that are involved in this, their calculations show that at 340 pounds per square inch, we can achieve over a billion degrees temperature in that little fireball. Because the boundaries of the fireball are, there's actually, it looks like an onion if you took an electronic microscope to it. And there's positive layers and negative layers which act as little shields that direct the motion of the particles so they never come to the surface of the fireball. They're always directed inward again.
Hmm.
And since the device is perfectly spherical, the energy stays inside.
And this is a small ball, then?
Approximately about an inch in diameter. This
you have it contained in some sort of a container.
It's in a metal steel container with quartz windows. And it's so simple to build with present technology. It's amazing that we haven't just got the money a long time ago from one large corporation.
Well, if that ball is that hot, what's keeping it from vaporizing the steel?
Well, the fireball sits inside a tank that's about a foot in diameter, and all the energy is contained in that fireball. And the only thing that keeps the heat from getting out is the boundary layers in the fireball. There's actually I'll give you an example of what a boundary layer can do. Have you ever gone swimming in the ocean and noticed that there's warm currents and cold currents?
Right.
Do you ever wonder why the water doesn't mix out and, I mean, there's a mechanism there.
Yeah.
And we take advantage of the same mechanism. You know, take the Gulf Stream. I mean, that goes for thousands of miles, and it's warmer than the water around it, and yet it doesn't mix out.
It doesn't mix out.
There's a reason for that. Not well understood, but there is reasons. And we apply that same analogy on a gaseous basis, and you can actually store temperatures with a boundary layer of colder gas. It's been proven at UCLA and a number of laboratories around the world. Nobody has found a way to make the whole concept spherical. That's the whole trick. People have done it on a plane or a flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nature shows us how to do this. If you go back to nature, you can get a lot of answers to things. Unfortunately, politics doesn't dictate that. Everybody wants to think of the answers themselves. But with a fireball, if you can create that boundary layer in that one-inch diameter, then you can have a differential of millions of degrees over a quarter of an inch of diameter. Hmm. So the walls that are maybe 11 inches away never see that temperature.
That's amazing.
Because this, you know, if you've got something 100 million degrees, it's going to melt its way through anything.
Anything. Really,
anything
right
you can think of. There's
drop
nothing
right down to the core of the earth. You know?
Right.
It would certainly vaporize anything stopping it if it was to maintain that temperature.
That's correct. So what would happen here is that you've got a unique way of storing high temperatures. And this has been the big stumbling block for making virtually limitless energy fusion sources.
Well, now we've got a ball about, say, a foot across.
Well, no, this is about, the fireball itself is only an inch across.
But
in
it's
this
now
model,
housed in a container that's about
a foot across.
About a foot across.
Mm-hmm.
And inside that is millions of degrees of temperature
right.
that is only affecting itself. It's not affecting
it's stirring itself there.
And what are you going to do with it?
Well, first you have to inject a hydrogen isotope, which is deuterium, to create the fusion reaction. And once you get up to the billion degree temperatures, the reaction takes over and you start fusing two atoms of hydrogen and making helium. You fuse two atoms of hydrogen together. If you stick them together, you've got helium. You've changed an element.
Mm-hmm.
You've transmuted one element to another. And when that process happens, you get two high-speed neutrons that come out of the fireball. And those have a neutral particle charge, so they're not affected by the boundary layers. They come right out of the fireball. And you collect those in a water jacket. In other words, they'll go right through the first metal wall, but are slowed down considerably by water. 1 foot of water will stop a very high-speed neutron. So you actually have a double-layered tank, and the neutron is slowed down in the water, and when you slow a neutron down in water, you tend to heat the water just as when you put a brake on a wheel, the brake heats up a little bit, just as in an automobile. So you turn the water into steam very quickly. Now, the steam can be used to generate electricity through a turbine steam generator. And that's how you get the energy out of the fireball. It comes out in the form of neutrons.
So the little fireball then produces the neutrons, which heat the water, which turn to steam, which turn a turbine or anything else that you want it to turn.
And there's also a concept we're working on, actually, to make the neutrons create other reactions, chemical reactions, and generate electricity directly. But that will come later down the road.
Well, would it create enough energy now for you to then propel the fireball itself with the energy that the steam engine is?
Well, this is strictly in a prototype form now. The larger reactors will have maybe a fireball of 2 feet diameter or so, and we can build it any size once we prove the storability of the high temperatures. And this is like 5 years away if we get started on it tomorrow.
Well, the interesting thing is, Bob, you feel now that you have, at least in theory, and with the work that you've done with it so far, a very good chance of creating this device. It's not just a harebrained idea or a scheme. You've got
absolutely not
theory there.
Mm-hmm. We've published this.
And you have published it. And it's just a matter now of collecting the funds and putting that together.
Right. And yet our government is so lackadaisical, they can't see anything like this.
Now,
it's
involved with this is no radiation of any kind, is there?
We use a deuterium reaction, which does not have any, it's not a radioactive fuel, and the process generates helium, which is not radioactive. So there's no radioactive fallout at all. The only radiation which you get that you can't stop, and every reactor that will do this, is you get a slight radioactivity in the middle of the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes away in about 10 years. You lose half life is about 5 or 10
probably
years.
Probably not as much radioactivity as there are in the walls of Union Station or Grand Central Station in New York.
Right. But I want to be honest. I mean, any time you have neutrons coming out of something, they're going to excite radioactive
To the degree.
But you don't get clouds. If somebody was to sabotage this thing, you would not get a nuclear cloud of fallout that would come over
cities. It's not the same kind of thing as we have in our nuclear reactors now that are producing electricity.
Oh, they're extremely dangerous.
Sure.
I mean, an earthquake could wipe out this whole area if one of those things suddenly ripped open and all the radiation went in. Especially if it was near the end of the fuel cycle when they had a lot of radioactive material, spent fuel. I mean, that's so dangerous. I mean, and you know, this funny thing, we get people now going around the country saying that you're funny how things change after 10 years. That, well, we should be able to shield ourselves against radiation.
Huh.
I mean, we're talking, the Hiroshima bomb was 20,000 tons of TNT equivalent. We got atomic bombs now that are a million tons of TNT. There is no radioactive shelter from that stuff, unless you want to live 1,000 years, 1,000 feet underground or something. You might survive that way, but I don't recommend it.
Now, we have an extremely dangerous situation.
This stuff is lethal forever, and we got people that are going around saying, well, we can live with it, we'll survive.
It's all right as long as nothing goes afoul, but
right. Well,
very few things that man has been able to put together do not.
That's right. That's Murphy's Law. If the machine is going to fail, it will fail.
Well, let's talk about now what it's going to take to put that into operation, and we'll get back to that in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me tonight is Bob Golka. As you can see, he's very deeply involved in some of the physics of one gentleman by the name of Nikola Tesla, a great favorite of ours here. But back in a moment. Explained how the ball lightning, what would you call that, generator, device,
fireball
production equipment that could certainly solve a lot of our energy problems and do it in a way that is not destructive, if not lethal, to the population. Now that you have all of this, Bob, what are the problems? Why isn't somebody building it out there?
Well, it's taken us 7 months to get approval by the IRS. They move fairly slowly. Sometimes they take 5 days to answer a letter, and then when you have letters going back and forth between lawyers, it takes literally months to get things resolved. But we now have, with the sanction of the IRS, a company called Pyrosphere Fusion it's a foundation, Pyrosphere Fusion Foundation. And we put this together to raise money, and anybody who pays taxes can contribute to this and get a tax write-off. And we're located at One World Trade Center, Suite 7967, New York City. If anybody would like to write, the zip code is 10048 World Trade Center, Suite 7967, One World Trade Center. The phone number is area code 212-524-7715. And we have a telex, which is 968-2279. We'd be glad to disseminate any information on this foundation, and we're hoping to raise money through large corporations, basically.
And if you missed those numbers, by the way, Bob, you can contact the station. Broadcast information later will have all of that for you on hand. Now, your foundation wants to just continue with the research, so go ahead and build some prototype.
We want to build the first prototype. We project two and a half years to build this, and the budget is $3 million. It's already been prepared. We know the type of equipment we have to buy. The lasers are available off the shelf. Everything we need is available with present-day technology.
And if you built the prototype, what would you do then? License out the device for the big corporations to go ahead and make these kind of power plants rather than the nuclear ones?
That's right. We would disseminate the information because this is in the bylaws of our foundation, but we'd have another company.
Are you finding any kind of resistance from the large corporations in this?
Not yet. They just don't know about it yet. But,
it's rather ironic, Bob, I think, that one of the largest builders of the nuclear reactors that are in use today is the Westinghouse Corporation.
Yes.
And it was Nikola Tesla's concepts and idea and genius that was the basis upon which George Westinghouse built the Westinghouse Corporation.
That's right. We, incidentally, there's quite a funny anecdote about the Westinghouse. When we were petitioning the Department of Energy for recommendation, we were one of the finalists, one of the nine finalists in the alternate fusion concept theory convention. It was sponsored by the Department of Energy, and lo and behold, Westinghouse was one of our competitors. We were in with big names like General Dynamics, McDonnell Douglas, Westinghouse, national laboratories like Oak Ridge, and there was a little company, Pyrosphere Incorporated, Wendover, Utah. And because our concept made the front doors, but we never got any kind of recommendation by the department. And we gave a presentation. I say we, Dr. Bass, Dr. Briner, and some other people in my previous company, gave a two-hour presentation to the hearing committee. And all they could do was ask questions, and nobody had any criticism. So this has been around the scientific circles, and nobody's been able to shoot it down. So until you can shoot an idea down and say you're violating some natural law of physics or conservation of energy, I mean, we're in the running just as like Westinghouse or anybody else. But the Oak Ridge National Laboratory did get the recommendation, and Westinghouse was one of their prime contractors. So,
well, there you are.
And that tells you, that tells you something. Politics plays a big thing in decision making, not
so what
science.
What is best for the nation is not necessarily what's going to be brought forth then.
Unfortunately, that's the way it works. I mean, it was the Wright brothers that made the first airplane, and yet a prestigious organization like Smithsonian had a five-winged airplane that was all figured out by very talented, knowledgeable, mathematical people. Mm-hmm. But the only trouble is it wouldn't fly. The Wright brothers worked with wind tunnels and nuts and bolts and actually made something that worked.
Yeah.
And this is where the credit should go to, people that do the work with their hands, and I believe in that very strongly.
But I think it's... it's a thing that we, the people, have to look at. As this society of ours moves further on down the scale of advancing technology,
mm-hmm.
the technology itself is now going to require a totally different approach to the manner in which we provide goods and services. And one of the problems that we've had with our system in the past is this old problem of greed, either greed for money or greed mm-hmm. for power, one of the two. And it does not work anymore. We saw that do destructive things to our society because the genius of Nikola Tesla was hid. If we had known or put into practice the things that he wanted to do 80 years ago, there's no telling where we may be today. We may not have had to endure a couple of world wars, in fact.
That's right.
Because of it. That's our conversation with Bob Gocha. That was recorded earlier last week, and we found it quite fascinating. Wanted to share it with you. We're going to break right now for ABC News at 11 o'clock, and we'll be back with open lines after that. We'll be glad to talk to you about the fireball or any other thing that may be on your mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. We do have new numbers for you. In Los Angeles, the number is 520-8030. The reactor may have been just a little bit complicated, but there is... What is interesting to me is there is so much about the world and the genius of Nikola Tesla that we have discussed before, and this is another fascinating facet of what Tesla had to offer us and what we didn't get to have because of some of the events that happened before. But for this next hour, our lines are open to you to talk to you about anything that's on your mind that we generally touch on in this world of Open Mind. A look at the new age, the new reality that is around us, so we don't necessarily have to limit our conversations to Tesla. We do have some new telephone numbers. As you know, we have new studios that are being built for us, and while they're switching things around, we had to change our numbers a little bit. So let me give them to you. In Los Angeles, your number is 520-8030 now, and we'd love to talk to you about anything that's on your mind. In the San Fernando Valley, the number is 990-1333. 990-1333. In Orange County, in the 714 area code, your number is 750-0555. And if you're in the 213 area, your number is 448-3430. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, your new number for a while here for the next couple of weeks is 244-1655. Down in the San Gabriel Valley, that's Arcadia, El Monte, Montebello, Rosemead, Monterey Park, in that area, your number is 448-3430. In the South Bay, your number is 679-7117. And in Compton, Lakewood, Downey, Long Beach, San Pedro, your number is 639-4010. So the numbers are new. Write them in pencil because we'll get back to our old TALK numbers after we get our rather extensive and highly sophisticated and advanced telephone system installed in our beautiful new studios that we should be working out of in the next month or so. Hope you get a chance to see them because it'll be a delight to be in there. So it's open lines.
I don't know what's going to be on your mind tonight. This is one of these times that we just take a stab at it, and I hope that, hope I'll be able to help you. So let's go to our callers. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Is this Bill?
This is Bill.
Bill, hi. This is Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Some time ago, I did a number of, weeks of research at the Department of Patents. There was a book that had come out on the market from Bulgaria, from the Tesla Institute down there.
Yes.
And at that time, Tesla had produced ways in which he could, and he had patented about 140 patents at the government office.
Well, 112, actually.
Was it 112?
Yeah.
And I remember one of those was on being able to produce electricity without the use of wires.
That's true.
And I was wondering if the gentleman that you had on your show had done any research in that area.
Well, what Tesla was talking about at that time, as we discussed and discovered here earlier, was terminology, we'll call the coupled scalar wave technology, which is a formation of a very fundamental electromagnetic wave that doesn't have a point or a tail on it. It's a scalar wave. You form one and move it out, then you form the second one at a greater magnitude, and whenever they come together and coupled, they become a vector wave, and you dump energy at that point. And this has just recently been uncovered in the last 6 months or so, although the Soviet Union has been evidently doing it for some time. Tesla tried as best he could to explain to the patent office what he was after, but the patent people didn't understand it. And if you read those wrappers between all of those patents that happened back in about 1915, 16, 17, sometimes for 3 years it would go on, you would see how exasperated that he became. But that's how he was going to do it.
I had remembered when I had gotten the book from the Institute in Bulgaria, it listed all of the various patents that he had at the patent office, as well as a number of other ones that at that time that they did not have.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I know that he had invented an X-19, which was basically a spaceship. I don't know if you're at all familiar with that, and that is at the U.S. Patent Office.
I don't think it's not in the U.S. Patent Office. That particular invention, I don't know about it. I have seen and gone through all of the wrappers that are involved with 112 patents at the Patent Office. And by the way, a source of information for you is the Tesla Book Publishing Company in Millbury, California. They put out an incredibly fine list of books dealing just with the patents, the original Tesla letters that went back and forth between the patent office. You look at the patents themselves, the drawings that he made, how he himself defined each and every one of them. And I recommend, if you're a student of Nikola Tesla, that you contact John Radcliffe up there, and he'll be glad to send them on to you. It's an incredible set of books.
Great. I was wondering if the gentleman who is on the show with you, I understand that at one time there was an organization either in Boston or in Maine that was trying to duplicate all of Tesla's experiments, and I was wondering if you know anything about that organization.
Well, Bob isn't with me tonight. I had recorded that earlier with Bob when he was in town about a week and a half ago. There are a number of people that are trying to duplicate those experiments. That's true. And you can get that information right out of from the patent office as far as what Tesla had to say about it is concerned. Also, from the Tesla Book Publishing Company, there are a number of his letters and his memorandums, particularly when he was in Colorado Springs, back and forth between his office, which are incredibly important. And in that, too, is a bibliography of everything, I think, that's ever been written about Tesla that goes all the way back to the turn of the century.
Great. Well, I enjoyed talking to you, and I think he's a marvelous man. He's got a great deal to offer, and I hope that we're in a position eventually to learn more about the man.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Charlie.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the call. KABC, you're on with Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Who are we talking to, please?
Hi, this is Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Yeah, and about 3 days ago, I was watching this show on TV about psychic healers in the Philippines,
uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you had a speaker or heard anything about it, if it's people that really
There's some really interesting stories that come out of a few of those psychic healers, I guess you can call them that. The problem with that one, Jane, is that there's sometimes there's so much fakery that's involved. And I'm not saying that that's what's happening with that group. It's in the back country of, I think it's down in Luzon, where this happens.
Yeah.
But we do know that the power of the human mind is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in tune with it, you can do a lot of things with it. You can make yourself sick with your mind, or you can make yourself well.
Oh.
And they have, evidently, there have been some people down there whose credentials are extremely reputable that have seen some rather miraculous things happen because of the so-called psychic healers. Now, some of them seem to be able to reach in the body and pull out tumors and things. I'm not too sure about that. I just really couldn't comment one way or the other.
Well, I see, because I was watching the show, and then they showed, I guess, some footage, and they kind of slowed down the tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't remember who the speaker was at the time, but he pointed out the, you know, like there were like those capsules that you use, you know, like you can spurt blood,
mm-hmm.
those types of things, you know, when you slow down the camera, I mean the videotape.
Right.
And then there were some that, you know, that looked real.
Yeah.
So it was like half and half.
I think there's a lot of show goes along a lot of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it happen even at religious meetings where a lot of people really do seem to get better after having that. And in a way, you can call it a psychic experience.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, people are sick because they allowed themselves.